Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in. Time for Daily Editorial. This is a real special, and we have a new, hopefully permanent guest on the program. His name is Jose Nino. Jose wrote an article. I met him, by the way, through Jeff Dies, the president of Mises. Jose wrote an article entitled "The Progressive Liberal Democracy Has Failed." Boy, has it ever failed. Next sentence is, "Radical decentralization is the answer." Jose, would you mind kind of talking a little bit about your article, and then I have some questions.
Thank you so much for having me on, Al. Well, this article main goal is to demonstrate that ruling class's obsession with liberal democracy and its alleged virtues is very misplaced. The COVID-19 pandemic, specifically the government's response to it, has laid bare that liberal democracy is not what it's cut out to be. In fact, it's not very pro-freedom whatsoever, as seen with how countries across the collective West basically turned into administrative tyrannies that ironically flouted whatever democratic norms they had by turning over power to all these bureaucrats, all experts. Just think about like Anthony Fauci and these people just lorded over everybody and started implementing a bunch of arbitrary social distancing mandate and shutdown measures. So this is like a very strong blow against this whole liberal democracy facade, which I argue is entering a stage where you can no longer make the case that it's pro-freedom. It's actually pretty despotic and authoritarian in many respects.
Well, it's incredibly despotic. I'm just finishing up a book by Dr. Scott Atlas, who's a friend of one of my neighbors. The book is called A Pox Upon Our House, and boy, he brings out everything in that book that you have just alluded to in the first couple of sentences of your particular presentation. I have a question for you in that area. Now, when you look at Fauci and his cohorts, are they in this, in your opinion, for power or money?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I tend to think these people really like the power aspects of it, because the type of people that are attracted to like bureaucratic positions and political positions like that are honestly some of like the worst. It's like what F.A. Hayek says, that government positions of this nature attract like the worst people and the worst rise to the top. So these guys just love controlling other people.
Yeah.
They're not exactly the successful people like in the private sector, because really successful people that are productive generally end up in the private sector and build their wealth that way.
Correct.
Whereas I think that for government positions such as the one that Fauci occupies, these are the kind of people that wouldn't make it in any productive endeavor. So they just go to politics where they get to boss people around, make other people's lives miserable, especially the people that are the most productive and that actually offer the most for society. So I think there's definitely a power component for a lot of these. But at the same time, we also live in a very highly regulated political economy where you have very parasitic corporate entities that hate competition. And what's the easiest way to stop your competition? Impose a lot of regulations that make it harder for new entrants to arrive in the market and consolidate your position. So you saw a lot of that during the COVID-19 hysteria, where a lot of corporations were actually pretty much in favor of a lot of these lockdowns and social distancing measures because they could afford to shoulder the cost of it. But every other small, medium-sized business had to either wind down their operations or just shut down altogether.
You know, Jose, one thing that I think is really interesting is about midway through your article, you talked about what happened in Canada with Trudeau. I am firmly convinced, and then obviously I'm talking about some of the regulations that he put into the place, using emergency powers, et cetera, attacking peaceful demonstrators, It was that not only had to do with cryptocurrency to an extent, but it only had also had a bit to do with stomping down really hard on somebody else's opinion. If you wouldn't mind, talk a little bit, and then I do want to get into radical decentralization, because I agree with you 100% on that. Because we do have to move forward, as you say, blaze a new path to a more just society, based on private property and freedom of association. The situation in Canada with Trudeau, with Justin Trudeau, was, in my mind, absolutely amazingly negative. Can you comment on that?
Oh, yeah, it is indeed a total violation of, civil liberties for a country like Canada to supposedly stand up for human rights and other freedoms. But a lot of that stuff they talk about are just empty platitudes at this point, because Canada is no different from a lot of the West these days, and that's right. Embraced big government, an administrative state, and all of that. And they use the classic example of using a crisis to expand the powers of the state to crack down on otherwise peaceful activities such as these protests.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, the Canadian regime just wants to keep these lockdown and vaccine measures and all of that in place indefinitely. And people started to rise up in a very grassroots manner, because Canada is very particular in that its so-called opposition in the Conservative Party is not exactly known for being very strong. So you had a lot of normal Canadians band together and effectively revolt against a government who overstepped its bounds. And it was a mask-off moment for the Trudeau people through its invocation of the Emergency Act to stop this Freedom Convoy protest, And then you had the cryptocurrency measures that were implemented to crack down on people who helped fund these protests. So all around it really did expose Canada as a country that just looks like another authoritarian regime. It just behaved in that manner. And it's very ironic, because these are the same people that are constantly looking to get into scuffles with countries like Russia, China, for supposedly being illiberal authoritarian regimes, when the irony is that Canada and other Western regimes have turned into what they fight.
You know, one thing I think is interesting, because I want to get into the concept of, radical decentralization. Towards the end of the article, you talk about how it's time for us to think bigger, and we can do so by drawing from one of the more, quote, unappreciated aspects of Mises' life's work, namely his focus on radical decentralization. Could you talk about that, Jose, a little bit?
Well, yes, it is effectively the concept of radical decentralization is almost as American as apple pie, because people tend to forget that the U.S.'s independence from the United Kingdom was the greatest expression of radical decentralization on a political level. It was an act of secession, if you will. And these type of lessons are very important, because the U.S. has a very decentralized federalist order, which has allowed it to have a lot of innovation and jurisdictional competition. People built with their feet, effectively, from states that are oppressive or states that are more friendly towards social freedom. So there's a lot of freedom in that effect. And I think it's a good way to disintermediate the current administrative state by having certain states, counties, localities nullify and not comply with blatantly unconstitutional legislation. I don't see secession happening overnight, but I believe nullification and a stronger focus on localism and state-driven activities that resist the federal government strictures is the way to go. And I think we have a very good example in Florida under the leadership of Governor Ron DeSantis, who has effectively led a de facto red state revolt against the COVID-19 that we've seen sweep across blue states.
Well, interestingly enough, the author of the book that I mentioned, Scott Atlas, said that in all of his conversations and interviews with politicians, the only politician who agreed with his statistics, which are hard numbers, true facts, was Ron DeSantis. I think it's kind of interesting that you would bring up his name.
Yeah, that's not surprising. DeSantis is a sharp individual who knows how to govern a state like Florida pragmatically, and he's not someone that is emotional like the way a lot of like the current political class is, and also like the journalist class. So the guy knows his stuff, and he's not going to fall for this hysteria. And I do not blame him for boldly taking to task a lot of these journalists that are constantly haranguing him during these press conferences and all of that,
right?
Because they need to be put into place.
Got a question for you. You're a new guest on the show. Hopefully this isn't the last time you'll be on, but tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a very, very prolific writer. I probably get articles from you almost daily, and I know Mises publishes most of your articles, many certainly, if not most of your articles. Tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would, Mr. Nino.
Okay, sure, yeah. I was originally born in Venezuela and came to the States when I was rather young. And I got into politics mostly through Ron Paul's second presidential run in 2008. That was around like 2007 I got into politics. And from there, I've followed him and people like Pat Buchanan. And I've like that has shaped my domestic and international affairs views with regards to politics. And since then, I've pursued like a writing career, and I've worked in like the Second Amendment lobbying space as an email marketer. Now I'm a freelance writer.
Right.
I write for various websites, such as you mentioned, Mises Institute, Big League Politics, Liberty Conservative News, and the Liberty Law, among others. I also host my own podcast show, El Nino Speaks. And that's what I'm generally up to these days.
Now, how can my listeners go to your podcast?
Well, yes, they can go to my Substack, Jose Nino Unfiltered, and they'll find my podcast there. It's also on Spotify, iTunes, and Stitcher. It's El Nino Speaks, ELNINOSPEAKS, and you can find it there. And then, you can find also my works in the aforementioned websites as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to you sharing your very, I know I'd have to say, intelligent and common sense writing with our listeners. We have about the same, in terms of the podcast, which you will not be on this weekend, you will be on the radio show. We have about 24 stations, primarily in your neck of the woods, that do carry our show. And I believe you're in Austin, Texas, if I'm not mistaken, and I believe a station in Austin does carry our show. Looking forward to having you come back on. I want to say this is one of the most interesting articles that I have read in a long time. I am a firm, firm supporter of Ron Paul, by the way. Ron has been on the program numerous times. I met Jeff Dice when he was basically running Ron's office in Washington, D.C., and he and Paula have become very good friends of mine. No question about that. Hope you can make it to come on the weekend show, Jose. And again, thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you so much, Al, for having me on. It's a pleasure talking with you.
We'll be talking shortly.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.